This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every week, we help you understand some of the most important news from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, September 4th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Today, we're talking politics and government. We'll start at the national level with the story that, in a normal year, would be dominating the headlines, the November presidential election. But it's not a normal year, and you'd be forgiven if you missed that both President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden were in town this week. Biden on Wednesday at Hazelwood Green in Pittsburgh, a former Brownfield-turned-tech hub.
When I think of the presidency, I don't think about myself. It isn't about my brand. It's about you, the American people. We can do better, and we have to do better. And I promise you this. We will do better.
President Trump made his appearance in Westmoreland County at the Arnold Palmer Regional Airport in Latrobe.
You know, we're doing the hangar thing now because the arenas can't do it because of the pandemic for a little while. But in certain ways, I like this better. I don't have to travel. I get off the plane, I make a speech, I get the hell out of here, right?
Their visits come as a new Monmouth University poll finds that Biden's lead among registered Pennsylvania voters is shrinking. Here to break down the numbers is WESA's government and accountability editor Chris Potter. Chris, nice to have you on the show again. It's been a minute.
That's good to be back, Liz.
Just 2 months ago, Biden was leading Trump by about 13 points. Now that's down to 4. To what can we attribute this shift?
Well, I guess there's a few things. One is, you know, there may not be a shift at all. That the 13 points is the same pollster, Monmouth University, based in New Jersey. I don't think anybody, when that poll came out in mid-July, I don't think anybody actually thought that on Election Day, Joe Biden was going to win the state of Pennsylvania by 13 points. So the fact that there's been some closing since then might just sort of be reverting to norm. Still at all, you know, it is a big shift, and Monmouth is a reliable pollster. They were very good calling some races in 2018 here in Pennsylvania. So, you know, if you're a Democrat, you're looking at this and, you know, whatever the Twitter equivalent to like people breathing into a paper bag is kind of what I saw a lot of people doing when I started posting these results. I think, you know, if you assume that there really has been a shift in the past few weeks, and Monmouth does, and their pollster Patrick Murray does, you know, one of the things he says is, look, you know, the Republican National Convention, which, you know, wrapped up not long ago, you know, seems to have planted some doubt in people's minds. There is some evidence from the people they polled that some of this talk by Republicans about violence in our urban centers, you know, some of the incidents of violence that have come out of protests, of police brutality, threats to the suburban way of life, whatever, however we constitute that, that some of those warnings from the Republicans have made an impression on at least some voters. At the same time they were doing that, I mean, the Republicans were really sort of doing this two-step where they also put a heck of a lot of Black and people of color in their speaking program on during their convention. There seems to be a little bit of softening amongst voters of color. These are not people who are all of a sudden defecting to the Republican cause, but they're a little more likely to say they're undecided now than they were a week or a month or two ago. So what you're kind of seeing here, I think if you do think that there's been a meaningful shift, it seems to be a couple of different places, Republicans peeling off some voters here, voters there, raising some doubts. The biggest shift that Monmouth saw was in voters under the age of 50 years old. There was a fairly marked shift. Those voters are still, by and large, with Joe Biden, but the margin has shrunk to a very large extent there, and that's driven a lot of the shrinking that you see overall.
What are the pitches that each candidate is making here in southwestern Pennsylvania? And I'll note that we are recording this on Thursday, midday, and Trump is scheduled to speak in Pennsylvania this evening.
Yeah, that's right, in Latrobe. Joe Biden obviously was here in the early part of the week, came to Pittsburgh to really make sort of a national speech that I think a lot of Democrats saw as sort of setting the table for the case he wants to make now, coming out of the conventions, moving now into this critical fall period. It was a speech that kind of used Pittsburgh as a backdrop. That speech had a lot to do with sort of addressing these attacks that I mentioned a moment ago by Republicans about, you know, how come these Democrats aren't serious about public safety? Look, our cities are burning and all that kind of stuff. he took that by the horns, and he took it by the horns by saying looting, rioting, any of these things that's caused damage to property or caused violence to people, that's not protest. Those are crimes, and they should be treated as such. So he's sort of trying to take on this Republican talking point that Democrats don't really take these threats to public safety seriously. But the other thing he tried to do was then sort of talk about a broader idea of public safety that he could use to kind of beat Trump over the head with. So he said at one point in the speech, and fact checkers have suggested it's true, that if you're a police officer, more police officers in the United States of America have come down with COVID and died from COVID than have died from any kind of violence. It's sort of a key statistic for him, because what he's trying to say is, when we think about safety, when we think about your family is secure, is this all you want to think about? Is it just cities and sort of civil disruptions happening there? Or are you also thinking about public health? Are you also thinking about the stability of public institutions and government? Are you also thinking about having health care and a steady job income? And so he's trying to turn this back on the president to say that Donald Trump himself is a threat to public safety if we have this broader sense of it. That's what Joe Biden said, came to town to say. I will also say the one issue that he spoke to, and we're going to hear it again and again between now and November, that does have some local relevance, is fracking. The Republicans have been going very hard at Joe Biden and the Democrats, saying he wants to ban fracking. Joe Biden has said repeatedly that that's not true. As for what the president will say tonight, you know, I mean, honestly, it's anybody's guess. We've come to kind of expect the unexpected. And there is, again, at least some polling data, and that may be an outlier. We'll just have to see. Time will tell. That may have some salience for voters here in Pennsylvania.
What sort of strikes me about Joe Biden's approach, this making the argument, for example, about how police officers are statistically more likely to die of COVID-19 than from violence in the streets. That sounds like a logical argument. And I think with most other political opponents, engaging on the basis of logic might be a good idea. But how far will that get him in a debate with President Trump?
I think the real question is, will debate performance matter for, first of all, we know it won't matter for Donald Trump's base. There's going to be 35-40% of people, we've seen this in polling, and this has been very consistent, that there's just a sizable chunk of the American population who is riding with Trump, do or die, all the way till November 3rd and beyond. So the question will really be that those swing voters, of whom there is a vanishing number, how much attention that they're going to pay. And I think, you know, I regret to say this, because I'll be watching the debates, and as citizens, we all should. But I think it's going to be the facts on the ground here. You know, if there's a resurgence in COVID, does that, you know, how does that shape people's votes? Where's the economy going to be? Some of those things, I think, are just going to be what kind of decides it. I just feel like one of the challenges that we're all in as journalists and as citizens is so much of the political rhetoric just seems to have collapsed.
Chris Potter, thanks so much for talking politics with us on Explainer this week.
Any old time.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
StoryCorps, together with 90.5 WESA, is bringing people together for a different kind of dialogue this summer. It's called One Small Step, a project that pairs strangers who don't see eye to eye for a conversation. The goal? To share and listen to the stories behind each other's values. Sign up at wesa.fm/onesmallstep. StoryCorps' One Small Step is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Now on to state politics. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has been evangelizing for recreational cannabis since he began seeking that office. One of his first moves as lieutenant governor was to embark on a statewide listening tour on the topic, wherein he says people overwhelmingly expressed support for legalizing the substance for adult use. Now Governor Tom Wolf is calling on the legislature to do just that. Here with more is WITF Capitol reporter Sam Dunklaw. Sam, thanks for being on Pittsburgh Explainer.
Hey, Liz, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
About a year ago, after that listening tour, Governor Wolf asked the legislature to consider legalizing cannabis for recreational use. Now he's just outright asking them to do it. Does this represent a shift in Wolf's thinking?
You know, I think it'd be fair to characterize that. I mean, you know, let's start with that listening tour that Fetterman and, you know, other members of the Wolf administration went on just a year ago. Of course, before the pandemic and all the social distancing restrictions that went with it. What they found from that listening tour was, you know, the wide majority of Pennsylvanians support legalization in some form you know, the minutia of exactly how that's going to get done and what the revenue structure looks like and other things like that are all, of course, still a matter of debate, things that we can get into a little bit later. What Fetterman and Wolf essentially took away from that listening tour was, you know, look, we have to get a bill to the governor's desk that's going to decriminalize cannabis-related offenses, you know, a big push for Democrats in Pennsylvania and across the country where this has been a successful push is tying this issue of cannabis-related offenses to a legalization effort, as in, you know, we're going to try in some way to balance what have been inequitable treatment for people of color and other folks in marginalized communities who have been oppressed by the war on drugs. At that time, they were seeking a path to expunge convictions and to just get the General Assembly to debate a bill to legalize marijuana. Now, of course, that was then. This is now. You know, we're 6 months into a pandemic. Businesses and government are suffering massively in terms of, I mean, not only revenue, but, you know, in terms of a loss of life and people being under restrictions. It would certainly behoove the governor and the lieutenant governor to push for any way that the Commonwealth can make, you know, a little extra money in these strapped times. So, yeah, so a direct appeal to the legislature, who is now meeting every other week, at least for this next month, to get one of the several bills that are currently sitting in committee right now in front of them to debate would probably be the way to go. I mean, what other card can you play?
The legislature, the state legislature in Pennsylvania, is controlled by Republicans. I mean, what sense have you gotten in terms of how effective this revenue argument might be for Republicans who are likely to not be in favor of legalizing marijuana?
Yeah, Liz, you hit the nail on the head there. So just to give you a sense of where House Republicans are with this, at least, Majority Caucus spokesperson Jason Gottesman sent out an email this week sort of entreating reporters to ask the governor a series of questions, particularly related to marijuana. And here's where they are. You know, one of their representatives pointed out at a press conference that the effects of substance abuse on families has been exacerbated because of quarantines and shutdowns. So how will legalizing marijuana contribute to the health and safety of Pennsylvania's children? Another question that's on this email, is it really responsible to legalize a drug just to get more cash? Now, what does that say about morals? So you can extrapolate sort of where the Republicans at large are kind of sitting on this issue. And that has been, of course, the talking points for a long time. You know, do we legalize a drug just for the money? What does that say about where we stand as a state in terms of what we say is okay versus what we don't? And, you know, of course, Republicans are trying to focus right now as much of the legislature's attention on, you know, getting people back to work, reopening the economy by any means necessary.
Are there bills currently in the legislature, I would assume introduced by Democrats, to legalize recreational cannabis for adult use?
Yes, there are. I did a little digging into this, and there are three bills, at least three main bills, that have been talked about and that were introduced this session. Each of them, in essence, would legalize recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania. Now, you know, like, for example, one of those House bills would provide some money for an after-school program, provide money for a mixed-income housing program, and the Senate bill does not. The way that the tax structure is set up, it widely varies. In the first year, one of those House bills would tax marijuana at 6%. The second House bill would tax it at 35%. The Senate bill comes right in the middle at about 17.5%.
WESA's science reporter did a story, gosh, I think probably a year ago now, finding that high taxes actually had a chilling effect on whether people bought through the legal channels. This was found in other states, specifically California. The higher the taxes are, the more likely some people are to go back to the black market. So, I mean, has that been a point of debate with these, or are we even at the debate stage with these bills?
You know, and that's just it. We're not at the debate stage. I mean, just, you know, a quick search at the Pennsylvania legislature's website will show all three of these bills are still in committee. They've been in committees since last year, and we haven't seen any movement on them since. In my home state of Illinois, when the legalization of marijuana was being discussed, that was a big talking point. And a lot of folks on the ground there are still talking about, well, If the tax on a certain product is too high, you know, maybe I'll rely on the black market, which I've been relying on for however many years before this product was legalized.
Sam, thanks so much for your reporting on this topic.
Thanks for having me, Liz. Appreciate it.
It's time for another break. Stay with us.
Public radio meets you where you are and takes you where the story is, in the streets of your community.
Why should we ever, ever stop fighting? We can't stop fighting.
And across the globe.
20,000 Parisians defied coronavirus restrictions and demanded justice for 24-year-old Adama Traoré.
NPR is available anywhere you are, anytime, anyplace.
Here at the local level, Mayor Bill Peduto and the Department of City Planning this week announced a new initiative called Forging PGH. For too long, Peduto says, developers have been able to write the future of land use in Pittsburgh. He says this is a way to play offense. Here to explain more is WESA's development and transportation reporter, Margaret J. Krause. Margaret, welcome to Explainer.
Hello, Liz.
Okay, so what is Forging PGH? Like, what will actually change that will, as the city says, make development and land use more equitable for all?
Forging PGH is both a plan and a process. City planning staff had been looking at trends and conditions in the city before they made this announcement this week, and they are kicking off a year of public feedback where they will ask people what they want to see in their neighborhoods, what they see that they don't like, what they're worried about. And then they will use that to create different scenarios, proposals about how land could be used for more public feedback. And then all that would be used to create policy proposals, basically looking at Pittsburgh's planning and zoning regulations to see what could change to create the world that they have heard people say they want to see.
How is this different from the various neighborhood plans that the city often facilitates?
Well, those are actually fairly new. The idea that there is a neighborhood planning process that is done hand in hand with the city of Pittsburgh, the planning department. This is like a broader citywide version of that.
How much power does the city have to sort of dictate how land is used? I mean, at the end of the day, a developer can still do what they want with the land they own, right?
Yes, they can. They can do what they want within what the city has said is allowed there. So the city's real power is getting to say, in this section, you can't put an ingot machine company because we don't do industrial work here. This is a residential neighborhood. So if I am a private developer and I own a piece of land in Beachview that is zoned residential, I'm not going to be able to come in and build my ingot machine producing factory there. So the city broadly shapes what goes in any particular place, whether it's residential, if it's commercial, if it's mixed, if it's industrial, if it's riverfront zoning. Their real power to say is this is the type of thing that you can do. And each type of zoning has allowable uses underneath of it. The power that they have is fairly tremendous. They get to say what goes where, not exactly what, not exactly the businesses that go in, but to say broadly, we have a mix of commercial and residential over here because we know that healthy neighborhoods, you can walk to the grocery store, you can walk to school, or you can walk to the transit station. And we want dense housing around transit stations. So instead of this being zoned single family residential, it allows for mid-rise buildings. The plan, it sounds like, for Forging PGH is to get a lot of resident or people who work here also. It's both people who live and work in Pittsburgh are welcome to provide input. The plan is to get all this input and then present some policy proposals, i.e. present changes to the zoning regulations or the planning process. We don't know what that will look like. So it could be very specific policy proposals. We just don't know. The zoning code is a serious document. It is chapter 9 of the city code. It's very, very, very specific. Presumably, you could make some serious changes. It's just a question of what those changes will be and what appetite there is for those serious changes because, you know, developers might very well say, like, this lends me no flexibility at all, and you need me to produce money for your tax base, so that we're at an impasse.
So how is the city going about, like, engaging people in these different communities and sort of soliciting the feedback about what people want to see development look like in their neighborhoods?
Well, right now there's a lot of online stuff because of the coronavirus. And then they anticipate that there will be some open house type meetings. The mayor said we're at a critical juncture. You know, for too long there has been disinvestment, particularly in our Black neighborhoods. And that has been really bad for the city. If we're at this critical juncture, why not test something out? Why not offer some scenario proposals, some short-term tests of different kinds of zoning overlays? And I don't know yet. I haven't asked the city, like, why are you doing it this way as opposed to using the information you have right now? A lot of plans, a lot of studies, a lot of feedback. Why are you not offering some proposals for immediate feedback as opposed to crowdsourcing through a fairly weak channel, i.e. online? I'm not saying, I mean, I believe very much in public process. I just wonder if we are at such a critical juncture, what is the point of diminishing returns for waiting? What kinds of information are you going to get that you don't necessarily already have access to, or at least have an inkling, where you could form a plan based on all these pieces of public information and documents that we have, and then go to a community and say, this is what we think we're seeing, are we right? As opposed to depending on virtual open houses and then open houses, and then creating a scenario, and then going back to the community.
Margaret, thanks so much for being on the show this week.
Thanks for chatting.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Christopher Ayers is our editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.